The Around the NFL Podcast is a workout wonder.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan. Back together, the whole group.
Yes, the group's back. I thought, Colin Wolf did a great job filling in on Thursday, but, you know, no substitute for the real thing. We got Mark back from his Don Draper, Dick Whitman-like sojourn up the California coast. We got Greg, who went off to New England and, hung out with the family, which I like to see you connecting with your roots like that, Greg. So, welcome back, boys.
Well, we come back and there's just a firestorm of activity around here in the NFL, in the office, inter-office fights, all sorts of things.
A lot of drama today.
Yeah.
It
should be noted that before we came on, there was a legitimate beef between Wes and TD that can't not be discussed.
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Well, it's made us I feel a little uncomfortable, but you guys got to work it out.
TD, we'll bring in a little early today. How are you?
How's it going, guys? How's it going?
Yeah, let's work through it because Wes and I came through the door and TD immediately got on Wes about some choice of words on Twitter. And what happened, the exchange was legitimate and, a lot of raised voices and some upset people. So if you guys want to work it out right now, the floor is yours.
I apologize for calling you a name, TD.
Wow.
That was good.
I've never heard Wes.
Wes, you know, you're my boy, man. You know, if our drop system was working right now, I'd put a little return to the Mac, just to show you some love. I mean, that's all it was. You got to talk it out. I mean, Wes didn't mean anything, bad by it. But I just, I took it kind of strongly. But it was a little Twitter conversation, talking hoops, little barbershop, who's better, top five, all that stuff.
It is finals season or the NBA playoffs.
Bird versus LeBron.
I take
high.
LeBron, and he, it takes Larry,
No, I don't.
No.
I took exception to you saying clearly when you hadn't even watched one of them.
Well, I think it's clear in
the
sense.
I don't like where this is going.
I just think it's clear in the sense that one's LeBron, and I'm not dissing Larry Bird at all. I don't think it's a landslide by any means. I just think one's LeBron, and all the numbers favor LeBron.
Well, hold on. One item that we're getting the milquetoast, watered down version of this where you're on air now and you're being very amicable to each other. The ratings would have soared if they had heard what was going on 10 minutes ago.
Brandon McGinnis, behind the glass, is there any chance that we have that audio that we could save for when the show is world famous and that could be like our behind the music type thing?
It got canned already.
It's usually the other way around. There's usually a lot of fake beef that we're playing up more than really is. This is a legitimate heat.
I loved it.
And now you're playing it.
I was dancing. I was literally dancing when it started. And then when there was like an F-bomb drop, I was like, uh-oh.
Well, nothing makes Dan happier than watching his friends argue with each other and put each other on edge.
Yes, until it goes too far, and then I get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
So you guys aren't happy now because we're not going at each other's throats?
Well, it's a little bittersweet what's happening.
Basically.
Well, no, we can't just keep going at each other's throats. We handled it, hashed it out, and, like I said, Wes is my guy. He's apologized.
Right.
If I didn't have a headset on, I'll come and give him a hug.
But that's enough. If you're not going to keep fighting, we'll take our time. All right, big show today. We got the whole team back together and, TD behind the glass and Wes and TD working things out, and maybe that won't last after we go off the air, fingers crossed. But we have a lot to get to, some news to catch up on since our last show was last Thursday, so some things to go through. We're also, we should do a little bit of a minor post-mortem of the Dalton Scale, which was our show last Tuesday, which is done very well in terms of metrics, which gets Greg excited. Old Greg, who sits in a different section of the newsroom now, him and his management cohorts must be lighting cigars, celebrating our 100,000 downloads.
Lighting $100 bills lighting the cigars.
We don't do any work. We just have all of our computers open and just watch dollar bills. Work, minions.
So we'll touch on the Dalton Scale because I think we all admit that we're working it out now after that discussion. We'll also get into a conversation piece, off-season narratives we do not trust. Mm. And Mark really stepped up, came up with that idea. He's looking for that second inter-office corporate MVP award.
I feel like Dan is emptying the notebook of all, you know, grievances at this point.
Well, this is a
I don't even. I think that we've come up with this before. I think I just recycled what was probably someone else's idea.
It's a bit of a Sessler special because no one hates off-season tropes and rewriting the same sort of article each year more than Mark Sessler, and I don't blame you. That's a good corner to be on.
Good. So we'll hit that. We'll each throw one out, and we'll have a nice little discussion about that. So that's the plan for today. And but before we do get into that discussion, we need to again touch base with TD, who is a real lightning rod for debate. You know, tempers flare sometimes, but you know, we all work it out in the end. Let's do some news, buddy. How are you?
I am good. I'm excited, and let's go ahead and do it.
Okay.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
And I initially had that set up for a news bit, which you will hear later on, but I'm changing that right now to the fact that that's for the fact that Chris Wessling apologized.
I have apologized that in the past.
Surprising.
That Tom Petty song, I Won't Back Down, was about Wes. I don't know if you guys knew that. All right, let's never change Wes. Let's get into it. We'll start with Adrian Peterson, who has not played a game in forever and now is not suspended, so is eligible to return to the field, and you would think to get back in the mix and all that, but we're not seeing it yet. The second round of OTAs have started for the Vikings, and Adrian Peterson is at home in Texas and plans not to be a part of this group, OTA round. Ian Rappaport reported that the plans are fluid for Peterson. It could change at any time, but as far as OTAs go, he doesn't want to be involved, so it seems like there's still something cooking here. You would think at some point the bad blood would be either, you know, washed away or set to the side on some level, and that he would get back to football, but this is continuing. Greg, what does it mean?
I don't think it means anything. It's voluntary work. There's a million veterans around the league skipping OTAs because they don't like something or they want to work out on their own. So it's not surprising at all to me. The real next step would be if he skips work where they can find him, like mini camps. And even then, I wouldn't take that too seriously.
Yeah, but isn't it a little bit weird that a guy that hasn't played in so long, it was week one of last season, wouldn't you think he would want to be back in the mix if there was ever a time to report earlier to the off-season programs? Wouldn't it be this year? I don't know. To me, it smells a little funny.
They're still negotiating. They're trying to get more money. Wes doesn't think that's the only thing going on here.
Well, I know it's not the only thing.
Well, he's not happy.
He's come out and said that he doesn't like the way he was treated last year. He doesn't trust certain members of the organization. And his wife, especially, is not comfortable going back to Minnesota.
Wife stuff.
Well, I mean, also, if you really want to push the envelope, I kind of fall on Greg's side where I think this is going to wash away in a month and he'll be back. But if the bad blood is really there, if you really want off this team, you've got to play brinksmanship. You can't just show up 3 weeks from now.
I think that's a big part of it, that his agent is talking now and sources close to him are telling Yahoo and Bleacher Report that he doesn't want to be there. And I think that's part of it. You've got to do a little brinksmanship to make sure you have some kind of leverage and get your point across.
Zimmer even said, I think I have an indication of when Peterson will show up.
Which is when the Cowboys play him in, what, week 10 or something?
So, I mean, I think he knows maybe through Peterson personally that when it comes time for training camp and for the real work to be done, Peterson's going to be there. They'll work out this contract stuff. And like a lot of contract stuff, it sometimes takes through July.
And we'll get a little more into this later in the show when we talk some narrative stuff. But yes, something to keep an eye on. The best running back in football, not involved with the Vikings camp so far. Moving on, the Chicago Bears have released defensive tackle Ray McDonald. This happened on Monday, hours after he was arrested after being involved in another domestic violence incident in California. General Manager Ryan Pace had this to say: "We believe in second chances, but when we signed Ray, we were very clear what our expectations were if he were to remain a Bear. He was not able to meet that standard, and the decision was made to release him." Of course, McDonald has a history of issues with the law, including he was released by the Niners back in December after being named as a suspect in a prior investigation for sexual assault. So McDonald now is washed out with the Bears without ever playing game. Is this, Mark, is this the last time we'll ever see Ray McDonald in the NFL?
Well, I think it's certainly gotten us a lot closer to that place. I don't know what – I think the Bears' higher-ups above the GM and above the coach were very hesitant to bring on any player like this to start. They let the GM go out and make his own call, and there was a real short leash. And I don't see another team jumping on this, no matter how their need is, anytime soon. No, I'd say it could be the end. We'll see.
I just saw last week John Clayton was throwing out a few teams that he thought might be good fits for Ray Rice. Sorry, Ray Rice. Mm. Ray McDonald just screwed your chances of getting a new team.
Hmm. I read that too, but I have to look at these as case-by-case items. But other people are saying the same thing.
You would think they would look at him on a case-by-case, but I think he's radioactive right now.
Rap Sheet said his career is likely over, and he's basically just connecting the dots because Ray McDonald isn't at – it's a sliding scale for justice or whatever you want to call it in the NFL. If you're good enough – people will look past it. That's why Greg Hardy's on a team. If Greg Hardy was a mid-level pass rusher, I don't think he'd be on a team. And Ray McDonald's good, but he's not great in this second offense. Now people aren't going to sign him.
I think this is the difference between today's NFL and the NFL of 2010, was I think he would get another chance 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't think it would happen now. I don't. And one thing that annoyed me...
Is that so bad? Like,
No. And that's no. What the point I was going to get to is... I was working yesterday, so I was plugged in on TweetDeck and seeing all the, you know, the Twitter moral integrity police were out, and everybody's like, oh, now it's time to start. You know, we got to get tougher. We got to start docking teams draft picks when their players get in trouble, and all these like crazy things. Like, no, this is actually things are working. Actually, it's better now. He gets arrested, and the Bears don't even wait. They say, you know what? We don't want anything to do with you. Release the day it happened. Now he's probably out of football. It seems like there is some change coming. So all the people that were like taking shots, I thought, at the NFL and Goodell. In this case, I thought we're out of bounds because there are strides being made in this department.
We always say that America is a land of second chances. If you acknowledge your mistake, you get a second chance. Ray McDonald has made multiple mistakes. Ray Rice made one.
Hmm. And Judy Batista wrote an interesting article pointing the finger a little bit at the McCaskey, the ownership, you know, group in Chicago and general manager and Fox. Really making the point, if Ray McDonald is not a transformative player, why are any teams taking risks on these? And should ownership or the GM, should they be taken to task a little bit or even punished?
I totally disagree.
In this case, it seemed like it was a last chance because it's a known defensive coach in Vic Fangio that knows what he has in this player, and that's probably why the connection was even pushed for on any level when you're trying to install a new defense. But who's going to take a chance now? I don't see it happening.
How are you going to punish someone for taking a chance on redemption? I mean, I don't know.
I guess you would just punish it a lot. Nothing's fair here, but maybe you come up with a system where teams get punished for any arrest.
Awful.
Why?
Doesn't make any sense. Why would you hold a team accountable for the actions of someone they can't control?
Well, I'm with Dan. I think that the system has gotten, whatever it is people are reacting to, has gotten a lot closer than it was even a couple years ago to, you know, pretty heavy-handed punishments.
It's pretty random, but we come down, you know, criticizing GMs or owners for random things that happen to them all the time.
Well, then you're going to get teams that are drafting only high-character type players, which is fine, except that's maybe not the best players, and so there's
going to be
another
reaction. And guys like Josh Gordon will be out of football, and everyone will have a scarlet letter on them. I don't think that's the answer either.
I guess it does seem a little hypocritical that the NFL puts these issues as so to the forefront, and yet their owners and GMs don't have to do anything different. They're going to sign anyone like Greg Hardy or anyone like Ray McDonald like they can if they can help their team get 5% better. So yeah. Then just shut up about it. Don't try to be the moral high ground if you're not going to do it that way.
Moving on. So Robert Griffin III, famously, or Robert Griffin III, Mark. Your preferred.
That's what I say.
You know, he hasn't been the same guy since that knee injury in the 2012 playoffs. It's been, two poor seasons since, and he's had more injury issues and all that stuff. Got benched last year. Mike Shanahan no longer is his coach anymore, but, you know, someone asked him about it. WJFKAM in Washington asked about Griffin, and Gruden had this to say about the struggles. I don't think getting hurt has anything to do with it. I think what you do is you rehab yourself and you get better. You don't have to have great running ability to run the read option. You have to be able to know when to slide, when to throw the football away, depending on if you're running or passing. Gentlemen, it sounds to me that Mike Shanahan is still of the feeling personally that RG3's inability to grow as a football player got him fired. What do you think?
Well, I think that's part of it. I saw other sites writing about this story. You can't write about this story without pointing out that Shanahan has a vested interest in driving the narrative that RG3's career was not affected by the injury because it was Shanahan's decision to leave him in the game.
It's fair.
Yeah, I mean, Shanny took a ton of heat for that. Although, any quarterback that you look at that's successful long term, durability is a huge part of it. I mean, our top quarterbacks are guys that play 16 games year after year, and I think that injuries have absolutely shaded what RG3 has been able to do in terms, especially two seasons ago, coming back too early potentially.
I'd take it a step further with Shanahan covering his ass. He's basically saying this guy, he's not a good football player. And that's why it didn't work, or he didn't work hard enough, or whatever was going on. He doesn't have the skills to make up for the injury, that it's not the injury, and that's why I'm out of coaching. Please hire me. Give me millions of dollars to flush down the toilet. Give me a break.
Do you guys remember the 90s? That's his bitch whenever he goes in for an interview.
And by the way, the Shanahans have been pushing this narrative about RG3 since they were in Washington. I mean, all those stories coming out about that were pretty negative about RG3 throughout his comeback and really the rest of the Shanahan era. Where do you think those are coming from?
I don't know, but it's two coaches in a row that don't seem enamored with RG3, the person, not only the player, but the person. So it's been maybe not the easiest quarterback to adopt for Jay Gruden either.
Shanahan's comments were kind of mixed, too. He also said Robert has a lot of ability. He's a charismatic guy. He's got mobility. He's got arm strength. He's a very bright guy. So he seems to be a little, I don't know, ambivalent here.
Greg, you are a Tyrod Taylor fan, correct?
No, not really. That's more of the West.
Someone went to the soapbox.
Oh, I have predicted that Tyrod Taylor will beat out Matt Castle for that job.
That's right. Well, listen, this is good news for you. It's certainly at least the talking points out there being put out by the Bills tell us that Tyrod Taylor is going to have a shot at this. In a competition with E.J. Manuel and Matt Castle, general manager Doug Whaley said last week in a conversation with the Bills website, the way they're structuring practices, everyone is getting a run with the ones, so it's a fair shake. Fair shake, Wes. In this system that we're trying to figure out who is going to be the number one, it's all about competition. That's why everybody involved is excited about it. You know, everybody's excited about it, except for Bills fans and people that look at, you know, outsiders that look at the roster and see something's exciting, but that position is going to ruin their season. But I guess Tyrod Taylor and E.J. Manuel are excited.
This is only news because nobody believed what the Bills have already told us, that Tyrod Taylor
is getting first-team
reps, equal reps with everyone, that Rex Ryan has a man crush on Tyrod Taylor and has for a while, tried to trade for him when he was with the Jets. So, I mean, of course Tyrod Taylor's in this.
That's a great beacon of QB knowledge, Rex Ryan.
Yeah, but Rex has he has a fetish for running quarterback.
Yes,
he does. It's his biggest crush since he brought Tim Tebow to the Jets.
Before that,
well,
he had Brad Smith.
He had Jeremy Curley running the Wildcat. I mean, no matter who's been running the offense, I think it's from a defensive side. He knows what's tough for him to stop.
Right.
And he wants – I think Tyrod Taylor is a part of this offense. The starting quarterback, I don't know.
I think when you face a Tyrod Taylor type of quarterback or – Tim Tebow, it makes the defensive coaches prepare for an extra hour or two, and then Rex is just there at 2 in the morning. He's, screw these guys. I need one of those quarterbacks. I mean, that's like
That's all it is, yeah. Well.
Anybody else have anything to say on this? I'm tapped out on the Bills quarterback competition
in
May.
Well, it means they don't have one.
Yeah. Well, they have one, but they don't have a quarterback.
Well, you can say all you want. And maybe Tyrod Taylor emerges to be more than we thought. And I know this isn't what Rex Ryan said, but it was John Harbaugh that said more than once, we're not happy with this guy. Mm. He didn't develop the way we wanted him to. So if Rex Ryan had a man crush on him, that's great. But it's Rex Ryan, and how many quarterbacks has he discovered?
What about your boy, the OC?
That's a different story. Greg Roman, you know, he knows
that's
what
your boy.
Well, but he's used this type of a quarterback before, so that's more evidence in Wes's corner. If Wes is the one who I believe historically has been pushing for Tyrod Taylor's career to flower.
I don't even care about Tyrod Taylor. Yeah, I don't want to see Matt Castle starting NFL games.
I still think Castle's their week one starter, but I'm a little less confident than I was a month or two.
Ooh.
A little less.
Good for my McFadden.
I still think
Castle.
I'll get the most starts, but yeah.
The rhetoric is starting to affect Greg's mindset.
It's a long offseason.
All right, let's move on and talk about a different quarterback, a better quarterback than Tyrod Taylor or any of those other flunkies in Buffalo. Ouch, that seems a little harsh.
Wow.
But a man that has a very high opinion of himself, that's Cam Newton, who was on a he spoke to a radio station, and it was told of him that he was one of the greatest unknowns at his position, or that's how many view him. And his reply was this: absolutely not. And I say this with the most humility, but I don't think nobody has ever been who I'm trying to be. Nobody has the size. Nobody has the speed. Nobody has the arm strength. Nobody had the intangibles that I've had. I'm not saying that to say I'm a one-on-one type of person that this league will never see another. No, I'm not saying that. Hear me out. I'm just saying that so much of my talents have not been seen in one person. Wes, you take your initial takeaway?
This guy is a treat. I say this with the most humility. What the? There's not an ounce of humility in that. What the heck is he talking about?
I mean, what he's saying, I get what he's saying, and he's right to some degree, his combination of size and speed and strength and all that. But at the same
time, the
accuracy maybe not, below 60% for his career or around there, and also 30-31 record as a starter. So there seems to be a lot to work on. And, you know, it's been around a while now, since 2011. Maybe it's time, with all these attributes that he speaks of, to become the big guy. Right, Greg?
I'm not sure if he knows what intangibles mean.
Or humility.
Using the context. I don't have a problem. I mean, this is what quarterbacks think of themselves. Newsflash. Dan Marino thought this about himself. Tom Brady, in his heart of hearts, probably thinks this about himself. Cam Newton's a little more open about it.
People said it about Michael Vick.
Right.
And maybe they're on the track for the same type of career.
That's an interesting one.
I don't have an issue with him being confident and speaking out. It's kind of fun to talk about. And and I say this with the most humility. I'm going to start all my statements with that. But to me, it does, if anything else, it actually, to me, achieves the opposite effect, Mark, in that, that's right. This guy's, you know, he's got all these stud attributes, and he hasn't been that great. He's been around for 4 years now. He's entering year five.
Any quote that wanders on and on, like the one that we just read, tells me he doesn't really know what he's talking about when it comes to where he stands among other quarterbacks to begin with. And I could think of five quarterbacks off of one hand that wouldn't want to be him in the NFL right now anyways.
But I think he was saying that he hasn't brought out all that talent yet. I mean, that he's saying so much of his talents are in one person. That's who he's trying to become, is a different type of player than maybe we've ever seen. And
Is Cam Newton paying you to walk back his quote?
I could see that argument.
I would take it from Cam Newton a lot faster.
He's a unique talent.
Right. Than some of these other quarterbacks that in year four or five were still, listen, here comes the big breakout season from Andy Dalton or fill in the blank. Like, with Cam Newton, I do think that there's a lot more there that the right coaching and the right scheme could bring out. But at the same time, why is he even saying this?
Because he's a preening schmo.
But I mean, what is the point? Because it's like, if anything, Cam Newton has made it very clear that he has parts of his game that need so much work that this quote doesn't fit who he is right now.
I think you're selling a little short what he's accomplished so far in his career and where he is in the quarterback, you know, echelon. Maybe he's right around 10.
What's he
like that. If he doesn't get any better for the next 7 years, they'll keep signing him to contracts, and 20, 25 teams would like him as their starting quarterback.
Right.
Be the next Jay Cutler.
No, he'd be better than that.
When Jay Cutler was 4 years into his career, was thought of more highly than Cam Newton is right now.
That's true. I think people are going to fall over Cam Newton forever because of just what he said, what his size is, what his gifts are. I mean, he's not going to suddenly be without work.
And in 4 years as a starter, he's been on one good team. And I know it's not all about the quarterback, but last year's team was a crummy team. I know they won a playoff game. The 12-4 team, that was a great team, got wiped out in the playoffs. And then it was the first 2 years.
I think last year's team got good down the stretch.
They were playing well. They've been in the final eight teams two straight years. He's only been in the
league. Oh, come on. Are we going to
play well last year?
Wait a second. We're going to pretend that beating that Cardinals team at home was some type of great achievement.
What did they win?
And he played terrible in that game.
He did, and he played pretty well. Then he played pretty well the next week against Seattle, where they're tied going into the fourth quarter. I'm just saying he was fine. They won, what, four straight games to end the season?
Yeah,
I don't think
seven,
his comment is about what he's done either. I think for anything, any foresight for what he's had, I think he's saying this is what he can become. He wants to become things that no quarterback's ever dreamt up. Well, that all sounds ridiculous.
How about
to
you
me,
become a 60% passer first?
That, I'd say, right. Start with the basic things that people are killing you on.
If nothing else, I am happy to have Cam Newton in our NFL lives. He's a unique player, and he's a unique talent, and he gives us quotes. He's a guy.
And speaking of
he's a guy
that's to be reckoned with.
Speaking
Cam Newton, he's
Newton,
interesting.
High praise.
He makes you want to watch.
I find Cam Newton to be closer to the Dalton line than maybe obviously Greg thinks, the Dalton scale, and you know that's what's happening to the news, by the way. But we should do. Let's unpack. You know. For a couple minutes, just go back to the Dalton scale, heated conversation, Mark, while you were away, driving up the coast.
I could feel the
tension. With the wind in your hair, thinking about yesterday's and tomorrow's all at the same time. just thinking about what life's all about.
Was there like any big epiphanies or big moments on that trip?
Yeah, I don't think they'd be appropriate to share. In this venue.
Okay.
But, did you like go sit by the ocean and then write the next Coke jingle?
I didn't. I know. I got a number of these Coca-Cola tweets. I was not attempting to be Don Draper.
Were you attempting to
be sleeping in rest stops, so, you know.
You legitimately,
I was not attempting to be anyone else.
I asked you where you
That's when I decided to turn off Twitter when the first one, ooh, what are you trying to do? You're trying to do this? It's like, you know what? Bye-bye. Gone. Just turn the phone off. I don't want to hear from anyone. It's like I just wanted a little bit of quiet.
And you did sleep in your car. That's true.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was a trip that I did not plan for from a funding angle. And
I'm just
so,
happy that you're
alive,
Mark.
I found it to be a very safe
rest place. Stop sleeping is usually a good way to get
that.
Stabbed in the heart.
I didn't overdo
what?
It.
Yeah.
That true?
I've seen some, you know, well, 48 hours mysteries.
Mysteries.
He's right. You got to be careful.
I mean, you got to be careful if anyone's coming and knocking on the, you know, on your window. There's
well, I woke up safely at around 3:15 in the morning and said, time to keep driving because I don't want to risk this, what happens between now and 6:15 in the morning.
Very smart. All right, so that's good. And I hope you achieve some type of enlightenment, but we're not going to ask you about it because it's kind of like a you thing. It's a private thing.
Yeah, as much as you could over 48 hours.
All right, so yeah, let's talk a little postmortem on the Dalton scale, and for those of you that might have missed the pod, yeah, we had we were trying to put where the quarterbacks all fit in, and when you try to figure out where they are on the Dalton scale, which, as a reminder, any quarterback above Andy Dalton is a viable franchise player. Any quarterback below Andy Dalton is a problem, not the solution. Dalton, we thought, was the purgatory personified guy, but that's also in. Up and for debate after our conversation. Wes, I'll throw it to you. Any takeaways after the show? I'm sure you got a ton of tweets, people asking you, you know, where your head's at with it. What's your next move with the Dalton scale? Where are you at right now?
Well, I think the problem is having this discussion in May because the offseason is the NFL's business season, and you see what happens every year. People fall in love with draft picks and potential. I came at this exercise thinking like a GM because I think you have to in May or else why even have the discussion? A lot of other people came at it as a fan or a writer or whatever. If you're talking about a situation in May, you have to consider salary, upside, that all that kind of stuff. That's what GMs consider, or else why even have the conversation in May? So I that's why I said, of course, I would take Blake Bortles over Andy Dalton.
One writer or one Twitter follower suggested the Dalton question could be reframed. Would you give this quarterback a 6-year, $96 million contract? Now, obviously, we could change the numbers around, but I knew what he was getting at. Would you pay this quarterback $15 million a year for 6 years?
I wouldn't pay Dalton that much.
Right. Well, then right. He'd be below the Dalton.
Right.
I guess
he's like the Mendoza line.
I took an issue if you put guys like Blake Bortles or Jameis Winston above him. To me, that feels like folly because the Dalton scale shouldn't be about extrapolation and prediction. It should be about like right now. So Blake Bortles right now is not ahead of Dalton, but maybe in 2 years he will be. But you kind of got to see it.
But you're not. I guess I would – I come at it as you're not acknowledging my point that it's May and this is the NFL's business season. You have to approach it like a GM in May. I think
I thought it was all just actually the player on the field, how he plays, who he is.
Well, then why even have the conversation in May? Why not wait until September or October until we have games?
Because what else are we going to talk about?
Well, wait, yeah. Why take Blake Bortles – with the third overall pick, if you think his ceiling is Andy Dalton.
Well, of course, the Jaguars would put it above. I know what Dan's saying, and that's how I approached it for the most part, too, was that you have to earn – you have to show that you're better than the average.
But you don't. That's not how the NFL works.
It isn't. How, yeah. How, why who would take Andy Dalton over Blake Bortles if today?
Nobody would.
I think the Bengals would. I think
they have to believe their own press, but I would never.
Bortles is a tough example because Bortles on paper had worse stats than, you know, some of the worst quarterbacks in the last 30 years.
This is Wes's actual wording of the definition. Any QB above Dalton is a viable franchise player. How can you say that about Blake Bortles right now?
That's why I think this is an existential crisis and the Dalton scale doesn't work anymore. It only works in the season. It doesn't work in May. I don't think that you – to me, I can't
– So in week two that works?
Once you've got games going again, yeah, you have evidence. You have, all right, this is the game film. But in May, to me, I can't have that discussion without thinking about salary and value. NFL value.
You also, at this point, dislike Dalton enough that he's not close to the middle for you.
Well, like we said on the actual Dalton Scale podcast, the line has moved since he signed a contract that makes him no longer a competitor.
I have a take on that. The Dalton scale, it can remain the Dalton scale, even if Dalton himself is no longer the prime meridian, because there was a time where he was the perfect example of a guy right on the line.
So right. That's not him. It's a measurement.
Right.
It's that's why he's the Mendoza line. It's like the 2012 Dalton.
Although I do like there's a chance for, you know, sponsorship opportunity, you know, branding, if we keep changing the name.
That's what I'm saying. That's part of the reason I feel like we should keep it. TD, you had a thought?
Tostitos, Alex Smith line or
just
whatever.
Give us money. Give us money. Seriously. Everything.
As usual, you know, me and Wes agree on this, clearly. Definitely, I hear what he's saying, but the ultimate point here, though, is that it's kind of like the top 100. You're taking into account what the player's done recently, but also projecting to what they're going to do next year. I think Andy Dalton, by the way, I think Andy Dalton stops being a Dalton scale when he doesn't make the playoffs. That's when you're like, you know what? He's done. We got to come up with a new name. It's no
about when
Andy
he wins
Dalton
a playoff game.
But he's the odd guy who keeps making it but doesn't win.
We're no closer.
He's in
a unified front on this.
Yeah, he's in a certain purgatory that when he breaks out either way, for better or worse, he becomes even more beguiling to deal with.
To me, it's still about that question. Is he a solution at quarterback, or do you need to keep looking for other guys? Now, whether Dalton's the perfect guy for that, that's another debate. But to me, Bortles might be below that line still, because if I had Bortles, I still would want to be getting other quarterbacks. Doesn't mean to take his job, but just as options until he shows that he can do it.
That's fair.
All right, good. We'll definitely address this again in the season.
Well,
maybe it will be different.
I know. I want to put some of this stuff on paper for the off season. Maybe
Dalton
scale written bit. Well, get ready, Wes.
Uh oh.
We can't write it. We have no clarity.
Long form. NFL.com
/Dalton
scale.
History of the Dalton scale.
By the way, thanks for tuning in to that one. We're gonna hit 100K on that.
Ow. So yeah, that's good. And also, this came down the old Newswire internal email system. That's how we communicate in modern society. The Around the NFL podcast has been nominated for this in the sports category of the Academy of Podcasters Awards. Oh, my goodness.
Presented by
Stitcher.
Yeah.
Which is something that's real. Thank you to everyone that has, listen to us and downloaded us and commented and checked us out on Stitcher, which must be some type of method of distribution that has led to a nomination for a major award.
It is the method of distribution.
I mean, if we win this, we can take that best of 2013 iTunes label off our logo. Which
might
is
be time.
A flat 2 years ago at this
but
point.
But this award show was supposed to happen in 2014, and then they postponed it because they were making a big deal out of this. So this is a 3-day event. And it's going to feature people from other popular podcasts.
TD already pitching himself to go to Texas.
No, he already is saying that he's going. Come on.
Yeah, I'm going. Yeah, it has Sarah Koenig from Serial. She's going to be out there. I'll be out there.
Oh, really?
hanging with Sarah.
Oh. Well, wait, we'd all go, right?
Yeah.
How would TD be the one that goes? You've put in the least amount of work with this whole group.
Wow.
I mean, that's just the fact.
I'm
your biggest supporter, TD, but you've only been on the ship here for 9 months. It is a conference
in addition to the award show. You guys,
is this a major award?
It is. It's
like a leg lamp?
It's being positioned as like
I'm desperately trying to get TD to put in the drop that I requested for this segment. And he just won't.
I thought that was a real question.
Yeah.
Good. Let's do it again. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah. Is this a major award?
It's a major award.
Oh, good.
It's a major award.
I like the idea that of conference mixed with an award presentation.
That's correct. After parties, all kinds of nonsense.
Why would we? This sounds like a perfect thing, a group building it's exercise.
It's a major award.
TD just wants to go, you know, meet women. That's my theory.
Yeah. All right. So. Yeah, thank you to everyone that supported the podcast, and hopefully we'll win. And you put that right next to our 2013 Stitcher Award, wherever it is. But
I think I have an idea where that is.
We won that, so you know, continue to rack up, you know, type of things that tell us that we're good, Mark, because those physical manifestations let us know that we're worth something. That's how I look at awards, don't you?
I need your award.
Yeah, I look at it the exact same way, Dan.
Okay, cool. All right, Dan Hans is here with the rest of the Around the NFL team, and we're going to do a little bit of talk right now about some off-season narratives. We've been tracking all these different storylines coming out of teams as OTAs continue, but which are some of the stories that we're not trusting right now? They're kind of being forced down our throat. And we're saying we're rejecting. We're like,
let's be honest. We're doing some of the forcing. We're forcing.
Okay. Fair. But we're saying, you know, get out of my throat. Reject it. And Mark, we're going to start with you. Give me your off-season narrative you don't trust.
Well, I mean, it starts with Johnny Manziel. And I think it was obvious that once he returned from his rehab stint that we were going to get some sort of reaction from the Browns. And it was going to either be very neutral, and it was for some period of time. And then their offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo, comes out and said that he's just been awesome. He's been great, are the words he used, that he shows up before the sun rises. He's there till the sun goes down. And it's like he's doing everything.
Because he's sleeping there?
Well, I don't know about that.
Isn't that your boy, DeFilippo?
I like DeFilippo. And listen, I'm not saying that I don't want this to be the case. I hope Manziel can turn it around. It's good to see that he is more committed. But I'm not going to trust anything about a Browns quarterback, and specifically Manziel, until September and we see it on the field.
It makes sense why a Browns fan would feel that way. Because I think maybe a couple of years from now, when we have a little more time to properly let it all sink in, how disastrous his first year was. I mean, from on-the-field play to the party stuff and then the trip to the rehabilitation center, it was as bad, even by Brown standards, it was an absolute nightmare. So anyone that thinks he shows up at OTAs and looks good for a couple days and some of the teammates are saying decent things, it's too soon to think that this guy has fixed his career and life.
And the thing, watching the OTAs today, he still looks incredibly small to me. That is my number one concern more than everything else.
Well, they can't fix that. That sticks. And for everything that happened off the field in terms of his work ethic or how he approached football, I think the bigger concerns are, is this guy ever going to be good enough and football smart enough to be a starting quarterback?
Well, I think Mark's point, when I watched Browns games last year, that was my number one concern. He was too small, and he wasn't. The moves that he could make to get past defenders in college don't work in the NFL.
Well, you hit upon with the off-season tropes. Whenever you start hearing that, oh, well, he's taking some great notes. You know what I mean? Oh, he's really taking good – he's a good note taker. I mean, what are they really talking about when they're saying he's doing a great job? I mean, they're only in there for 3 or 4 hours at a time.
Right.
They're limited to what they can do. He's showing up for work, and he's doing his job. And I think Mike Pettine is trying to – quiet down this story a little bit.
He is, even today.
On Tuesday, he said, you know, let's not get carried away. You know, he's working hard. It's the off season. What could he really be doing that's so impressive?
And he's entrenched with the second team. So this very clearly looks like it's Josh McCown's team. Now, I think barring some McCown, you know, 2013 flourish, Manziel's going to have a chance to play. But it all depends on whether he proves it to the Browns. Now, he doesn't get any – I don't think they're going to give him any free pass back on the field, and he's going to have to show something in practice and in the room for the meetings and all that.
Yeah, I think McCown is capable of playing himself out of the job, too, on an offense that lacks weapons, so it's very possible we see Manziel. You have to go back a decade plus for a year where one quarterback started 16 games for them. So
let's go week 7. That's my pick.
I go week 5.
Okay.
I'll take six.
Week 14.
Mark.
Wow. A lot of, well, you love Josh McCown.
Wait, 3 months ago you were saying Manziel won't play in a single game this year.
Things change. Oh. The tropes start to get into the mind.
Mark, Johnny Manziel in football 2017.
Yes.
Okay. Moving on.
Football's pretty, you know, big, broad topic.
I kind of meant NFL. But
quarterbacks have many lives. I don't think he'd be gone that quickly, but he would be going close to then.
Yeah. All right. Chris Wessling, what are you not necessarily trusting that's coming in through the NFL media machine?
Well, Greg and a few other people I know believe that the Adrian Peterson saga this offseason is solely driven by money.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I don't. I think that it, obviously there's more to it than that. I think that he really had his feelings hurt last year. I mean, more than his feelings hurt. He doesn't trust anyone. Well, he doesn't trust certain members of the Vikings. His wife doesn't want to be in Minnesota anymore. He wants to play for a contender, or at least that's what his agent told Bleacher Report this weekend. He wants to play for a contender who will stand by him and defend him like the Vikings did not do last year.
So what is it? What's the offseason? You're not buying my offseason hype.
I'm not buying your narrative.
Wes, I'm going to introduce you to your boss, Greg Rosenthal.
I'm not buying your narrative that it's only about getting more guaranteed money. In fact, a confidant close to Peterson told Yahoo that it's never been about the money.
Yeah, you know what Yahoo is? That's the place that just spoon feeds agent information to help their clients. That's what I. That's how I read that.
Greg crosses Yahoo off a potential employer in the future.
We've been following this Peterson thing every week for a while. You know, there was no way they wanted to play with the Vikings. Then once they kind of realized it after the draft, they started to make it clear. Ian Rapoport reported, okay, now they're changing gears and they want to get more money. Now they're not getting the money that they want exactly, so they're going on another offensive of leverage.
Well, you think there's a chance that Ben Dogra and Jerry Jones behind the scenes have shared, you know, maybe a couple dinners, a couple phone conversations that say there is still a potential chance. Jerry Jones said he was still willing to maybe trade next year's number one pick for a veteran player this year that could help the team keep that Super Bowl window open.
Well, if you were a conspiracy theorist, you could look at Greg Hardy's suspension and think Jerry Jones says, ooh, that's $5 million more in cap space than I thought we were going to have.
There you go. That sounded exactly like Jerry Jones.
Let me ask you this. Who knows Adrian Peterson's true feelings better? His agent and someone close to him, or Viking sources?
I don't care about his true feelings. I'm not arguing that he wasn't offended by the Vikings and that he wasn't annoyed by them. But this stuff about playing for a contender, all of this goes away if they give him the money he wants. So then that's the important factor.
So when his agent and when people close to him come out this week and say he's still very miffed with the Vikings, he doesn't want anything to do with him. He said in meetings with them all offseason he made it clear he wanted to be traded. And they're saying all that again this week. You're saying none of that is true.
What happened after the draft where the agent was like, this was all, you know, what the Vikings showed us. It was like a test that they passed.
Yeah.
Wasn't that what
exactly
happened?
Exactly. The agent said, like, we like the fact that they've been so steadfast that they believe in him so much that they haven't even entertained offers. I don't doubt that he was pissed at the Vikings. Of course he was mad at them, but I think money would solve that.
Well, all about money plus no one making a play for him, no other option than to sit out another year out of stubbornness. I mean, it's kind of like you break up with someone, and no matter what she does, if you really truly are on the outs, you're never going back. No, it doesn't matter what she does. You're never going to like that girl again.
Here's another reason why I don't believe it. Adrian Peterson welcomed Mike Zimmer and Spielman into his house, and Zimmer said he has an idea of when Peterson is going to come back. I think Adrian Peterson will be happy to play for Mike Zimmer. I think he'll be happy to play with Teddy Bridgewater. It's not the coaches and the teammates. He's mad about the organization. Big deal.
And by the way, if what you're thinking is right, that he does want out for more reasons beyond money and he wants out of town, if he thinks we're heading close to June 1st, if he thinks he's going to end up with a raise playing for the Patriots or something, it's not happening.
I think
it's not the way the NFL works.
People are underestimating his wife's role in this.
Maybe. And that's fair. It's the stuff about the contender, I guess, that sort of thing. It's like, first of all, the Vikings might end up with a better record than the Cowboys anyways. Who's to say who's a contender? I'll take Minnesota.
Wow.
The one thing we're going to find out is this is going to be really exciting to see what happens next. That's my thought.
That was an outstanding segue.
Thank you.
Dan.
Here's the offseason narrative that I don't trust personally. There's a lot of chatter out there about after they changed the two-point conversion. Of course, the kick is now like 32 or 33 yards for the point after being for years it was, what, a 17-yard attempt. And, you know, Gary Kubiak came out and said last week that it's going to change the way we play the game a great deal. I don't buy it. I'm not buying it. I don't trust that all these teams are all going to all of a sudden start going for two like crazy. I think they're going to send their kickers out on the field, trust them to hit 32-yard field goals. Most of them will do it. And the guys that don't miss it will probably lose their jobs. I think the only big thing that come out of this year, a couple outliers, maybe a Chip Kelly or someone like that could get a little frisky. But you're just going to see some kickers lose their jobs over extra points, which is why all the kickers are all, you know, honking, to use a Gregism, in the first place, because they just realized their job got a little harder.
A little harder as in, we're going to guess they're going to make like 96% of their extra points now?
93 to 94% is what the committee came up with.
It's roughly the same percentage of NFL coaches who are risk averse. So don't expect them to start going for two-point conversions. They're still going to go with the safe play.
I agree with that. I don't think it's going to be a game
change. It was a classic half measure because they should have just put the two-point conversion at the one and then let all the mathematicians basically explain that that's the better play odds-wise. And then it gets real interesting, but they didn't do that, and I think it's going to result in just a lot more longer extra points.
Well, it reminds me of 1994 when they initiated the two-point conversion, and there was the same off-season chatter of, whoa, this is a total game changer. This is going to completely alter what offenses do and how they attack and how they come from behind, and it did nothing. The two-point conversion was used rarely, so rarely that it – you know who put the first one in? Belichick, of all people. I mean, listen,
he's an innovator.
But it was barely used.
Extra point thing.
And I think that's why they had to even make this change, because the initial change to the two-point conversion never really took effect.
Well, it's affected pretty big games. I mean,
but it's not used like,
the Seahawks going to the Super Bowl last year.
Remember Dom Capers?
I mean,
it was his first game with the Texans. He chose to go for two to avoid overtime, and he nailed it.
Ooh,
I think it was like the Texans' first game ever.
It was against the Cowboys, right?
I don't know.
I've been
beat the Cowboys in their first regular season game.
I've been wanting to get rid of this extra point a long time, and you're right. I think the results will be disappointing. I do hope that they're so boring that they consider moving it back again to the 43 or moving those.
Just get rid of it then. If you're going to make it like a really hard kick, just get rid of it.
But it was a really hard kick when they first – not really hard, but it was much harder when they first had it. Maybe just get rid of it.
When they first started extra points?
Yeah.
Well,
they weren't nailing them.
Because they were toe bangers. They weren't kicking soccer style.
Right.
Hey, old buddy, you're a toe banger.
You got Lou Groza out there kicking toe bangers.
It's one thing you don't want to be called in life. Or anyone banger? In your family. Oh, your sister's a toe banger.
Well, you ever? Did you guys ever play soccer?
Right. Yes.
So, like, you know, when you're in grade school and you're playing soccer, if you kick it toe style, they call you a toe banger.
You know, it's seen as uncouth in the soccer world because you can't control the ball. It's just a fireball you're sending out there.
The only goal I scored on my own team.
Yeah.
I was defense, and the only goal kicked it off the back of my foot, and no one was watching. It just went off the back of my foot into the goal, and no one knew where the ball was. And I was like, "What? I'm 8 years old. What am I doing here?"
Loving the soccer talk.
Got to get off the sport.
Loving it.
All right. Finally, Greg Rosenthal, known as the boss, you know, freshly back from New England. Were you at the Free Brady party
rally?
In New England? The rally?
Did not bring my.
I thought of you immediately. I said,
no,
I was like, if there was a news show and they were like scrolled across the crowd and it was like Greg in full like face paint, holding his daughter on his shoulders, it would have been my favorite thing since we found out about Delaware. Anyway, Greg, the off-season narrative that you do not trust.
My narrative I don't trust is the thought that Peyton Manning's done and that the Denver Broncos Super Bowl window is closed. I look at that roster and I see one of the top three or four rosters in the NFL, and I think there's a perfectly reasonable chance that Peyton Manning's going to go out there this year and be a top 8 quarterback or top 10 quarterback. Maybe he's not Peyton Manning MVP year, and I don't think he needs to be for that team to make the Super Bowl.
Who's driving this narrative?
This is largely a Twitter narrative I've found, rather than
I don't know. I brought it up with Dan.
Yeah.
Is this even
I don't think so.
Damashek has said it on this show, but I haven't heard it anywhere
else. Yeah, but he doesn't count with anything Peyton Manning. I feel like he has to recuse himself at this point.
There's a general feeling or a general – I don't think when people are coming out with picks in August – and no one's taking the Broncos anymore. And to me, there's no difference this year really when I look at the Broncos compared to the last couple of years, right? I see it there and them as one of the favorites.
I think there's a big difference. Peyton Manning's a mystery now. Nobody knows what he is.
Right.
But, you know, I do find it interesting that I think it was Pro Football Focus or maybe it was Roto-World put out their top 100 players and Manning wasn't on it. I thought that was symbolic of the way that people now are not giving Manning the benefit of the doubt based on the fact that he got injured at the end of last season. And for some reason it's been decided by some people that he's done and he's in a period of decline. But we don't even attach it. Nobody says anything about, as an example, Tom Brady, who's, I think, 13 months younger than Manning. No one ever says, oh, he might be getting old. Manning got hurt his quad, and now all of a sudden the belief is that he's not going to be able to bounce back.
It's all what people just – I mean, Brady just heroically won the Super Bowl, and now he's an anti-hero. You throw all that together. But, like, with Manning, it's the last impression we had of him in that Colts game where – he looked subpar. It was hard to watch. It's hard to watch someone that's been as good as he has been for so long play at that level. But then you find out that the injury impacted it all, and that should change the way we feel. But I don't think there's a narrative saying that anyone picking the AFC West has the Broncos as a shoe-in AFC West winner and a final four contender in the AFC. That's the way I'd see them. Yeah.
I think the Peyton Manning injury thing, it's hard to separate how much of that was the quad and how much is his arm. And how much is it?
They're connected, though.
I'm sure they are. Yeah. But the last few years, he's lost arm strength come December and January.
Or how likely he is to have some other problematic injury next year that pops up.
Sure,
right.
Very possible. But everyone should also remember that through about, week 9 or 10 last year, he was probably the best quarterback in the league, besides maybe Aaron Rodgers. He was a stud. He was on pace to throw 50 more touchdowns,
right.
And then he got hurt.
And people have tried to dig dirt on Brady at various points. I mean, there was that sort of off-season conversation last year. Has he declined or not? Well, so you said, okay, Peyton Manning's a mystery. He is. But Tom Brady is a mystery, too. The cliff is coming for Tom Brady. He's going to fall off at some point.
You talking about the reigning Super Bowl MVP?
I'm just saying he could have a bad season, and it shouldn't shock anyone. Considering,
but I don't think he's a mystery.
Pretty bad stretches.
He's not a mystery yet. There's no evidence. Well, we have evidence with Manning his last 8 games of last season.
Will you press
pause?
What's
he going to do when he has to use a regulation football? Will you tell me that?
Oh.
This guy's been cheating.
Whoa.
Probably the same thing he did in the Super Bowl when he had to use a regulation football or the second half against the Colts.
Hey, before you hit me up on Twitter, that's a joke, you punks. Break.
Greg was definitely at the Free Tom Brady parade.
It was many of his operatives if it wasn't him. He paid people to go. fill that venue.
All right, that's it, folks, for today's edition of the Around the NFL podcast. Thank you, as always, for listening. We will be back with our second show of the week on Thursday, so make sure you listen to that. And,
Wait, hold up.
What?
I even forgot. Podcaster MVP. The podcast MVP.
Oh,
very quick.
We're still doing that?
We do it. People love it. It's going to Dan Hazes for creating the Free Tom Brady, Greg Rosenthal character. That was
wow! Right under the gun there. I'm very proud of
buzzer
myself.
Beater.
I've never. Dan is beaming right now. He
that has social.
I know what he looked
potential.
Like on his first date with his future wife. I mean, he looks like he's in love right now.
That has real meme potential, man. So if you're listening, if you want to create a Greg Rosenthal character, that's the one.
I thought you might give it to Wes because just as a bury the hatchet maneuver, or maybe to Greg. Because he's our boss, I knew you weren't going to give it to Mario.
Yeah, I don't, TD, I think that we've done a good job today, and I like that your conflict with someone else overshadowed what is a consistent one with me. It's back on the map. I'm very annoyed.
Oh, man. Hey.
You forgot something else.
What?
We're supposed to ask about favorite segments.
Oh, I was going to do that on the next show.
All right.
But since you brought it up,
showrunner Chris Wesley.
Yeah, at producer TD, I want you guys, all the listeners, for this award that we've been nominated for, a major award, in fact, we have to submit a 5-minute section of one of our shows. So if there's a part of one of our shows in the recent weeks or months that you particularly enjoy and for some reason it's in your mind as I'm saying this, hit up at producer TD. And let him know and put him to work, and he'll clip that off and send it to the Academy.
And remember,
It's a major award.
Exactly. All right, now we can go. Can we go?
Ask Chris. He's a sure winner.
Yeah, Wes, can we go?
Yeah, we out of here.
All right, good. This is Dan Hansis signing off for the Sizzler, Mark Sessler, the mailman, the boss, and the great TD behind the glass. And I see you, McGinnis. And also you, Mr. Mustache.
Mr. Mustache.